Welcome.
Hello. How are you both doing today?
Good, good. How are you?
Doing good. So I just moved to Salt Lake City. This is the new apartment. Still kind of got to get a couple things in order, but moved 2 days ago. Had a full day yesterday and have been doing the process of moving over the past week. And it's been quite good. I'm super excited for the training in the next few months and then going to college in the University of Utah in the fall.
So you didn't train in Salt Lake before? You trained more in where it was, Texas?
Yeah, Texas. I spent a lot of time here, just like staying with people. In Salt Lake City, but I've never properly lived here. But now I have a place now. Mostly in Texas, and I was like probably a third of traveling in Texas and Salt Lake City, and then now it's going to be primarily Salt Lake City as my place of residence, and then obviously the World Cup circuit takes up quite a bit of time as far as nights spent not at home.
Is this an improvement in terms of training for you?
Oh, absolutely. This place, I really got to be ideal for the training environment, like buying all the stuff I need and to have good nutrition and good sleep. Everything I need is here. And then the USA Climbing Training Center just recently put up the speedwall for the World Cup, and they're going to leave it out for the summer. Then the Momentum Mill Creek got new holds, and the timers are great, and there's a great crew. They actually built another speedwall that is like 2 minutes away from me, like walking distance. So definitely the future is bright for Salt Lake City as a place for training. So I'm super excited to be here for sure.
So is it important to train on different walls?
So there's a various amount of specifications for speed climbing that one could prefer in a certain setup. So the wall is the same every time, but there's three or four different hold sets that are out there. There's probably more. But since I think there's a 2019 set, a 2021 set, and a 2023 set, and the IFSC has slowly made them bigger and bigger so that people can be faster on them and then have less mistakes, because it turns out that speed climbing can get more attention when people are running world records and are faster. So the current hold set is the biggest hold set, and it's really nice. It's super easy to train on. It's just massive jugs. And also the wall quality, so like the granulation of the wall, allowing your spanish to stick. The timing system can be different, and whether the wall is indoors or outdoors, you're facing the sun. It really has a lot of the same conditions as one would have in regular rock climbing. You want to have ideal temperature, ideal conditions with around you outside if you're climbing outside. It's probably not as much, but there's definitely another aspect of it's not only the same wall every time as far as that goes.
I mean, I knew it was the different texture on the actual wall, but I didn't know the difference between the holes were actually that big.
Yeah. So what I would describe it as if you make a tiny mistake, in which case if your hand is a millimeter off, or maybe not a millimeter, a centimeter, then you're grabbing a smaller part of the hold, versus with the newest set, it's all a uniform jug. Versus with the ultra set, it's just a jug and a smaller portion of the hold. So you, in theory, if you hit everything perfect, then it's about the same. But if you make a tiny mistake, then you have more margin of error in with the larger hold set.
But the holds will be on the whole World Cup the same. It would be the last edition of the holds then.
Yes. So for, I believe, all of the World Cup, I think IFSC actually still has the older ones certified, but for this World Cup, and then for the World Cup in Wujiang, and the World Cup in Chamonix, and the Paris Olympics, obviously, they're all the new hold set. So it's definitely quite nice to be training on that as well, that I'm competing on it.
So we should be seeing even more consistency then, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully. I think that kind of worked with the last couple World Cups. Mm-hmm. That's where it's people. But I mean, there's still so many other mistakes you can make that's not just not down to the hold. It doesn't prevent all mistakes from everyone, for sure, but it's definitely a step in the right direction.
What about the surface? It's not strange that's always different?
So I think there's a specification that it has to be above a certain granulation amount, like a population of the sand or whatever. Like there's and there's different methods you can use, but there's still various different ones that are allowed. So it's not super standardized, as with nothing is for IFSC comps, but it's not super standardized, but it generally, like, if it's within a certain range, it's about the same. Like you don't need a super, super textured wall, or as long as you can smear, it's mostly fine at a high level. I personally, it's, some people would say, like, you know, if I slip once, it throws off my game, and you know, but I'm personally just like, yeah, if I have a tiny pop, it's fine. I can still do the nose.
But how big is the difference actually? If you say in how many hundreds of seconds or approximately, I mean, between the bad and the good wall in certain
So
worlds.
again, I would say it's a little bit more consistency based. Like you might slip more on a worse wall. I would say in terms of performance at max, a pretty small amount actually, because if you're having a perfect run, you're going to be able to have a pretty good run on either one. If your smears are sticking, like on either a bad wall or a good wall, they're going to be sticking. I would obviously say if you said, okay, I'm going to give you 10 runs to run a 4.6, then I would say give me the perfect wall for sure. But I don't think it's a biggest deal as far as like the granulations go specifically, just preventing slips. Because like I've had a couple runs, including the world record run actually, that my foot did pop a little bit, just like at the very end, it just slide down, and you can still do almost perfect run without that. So at a very high level for the top like speed climbers, I don't think it matters as much as people think, but it's definitely nice to have the best conditions possible.
I guess it's a matter of feeling though. Like if you feel more, if you know it's a good wall with good holes, I mean, you're gonna feel more in control, right?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. It's more of a mental thing than people think. And my philosophy, it's just I know I can do well regardless of the wall, and I'm gonna be in situations where the wall isn't perfect, and there's nothing I can do about that. So, if you really want to have the ideal mentality of control the controllables, then it doesn't matter. But in actual reality, it does matter to a certain extent. But
Right.
Well, I think we jumped straight into the, like technical details. Maybe we should start from beginning. How did you start with climbing, or how, why?
So I grew up in Dallas. There is no mountains around me. It's like the probably the flattest place in the world. Probably not, but the nearest like crag to me is like 4 hours. That's like anywhere decent good outdoor climbing. So definitely a gym climber from the day one. I started climbing very young. I think I was 5 years old, which isn't that young compared to some people, but I mean pretty young, right? I was on a youth team all growing up. Throughout my I did I competed in the USA Climbing Youth Circuit, eventually Youth Worlds. I did lots of like training and learned to be an athlete as one would for any other sport for climbing, because there's such a great community around me that pushed that idea that that was possible. So I definitely treated climbing like, you know, as my primary extracurricular activity. And eventually I just got good enough to the point which this is like I think I can reasonably pursue this as a career, and I've been there kind of ever since.
But was it speed climbing from an early age then?
No, I started out as a bouldering league athlete primarily. I started speed climbing when I was 11, then started doing the actual main route, so that we did C and D speed, which is U 14, U12. They don't have a standardized speed route. They just have like, you know, like a light speed competition. And I would do that, but I wasn't really into it. I primarily like bouldering and lead for competing in youth. But I think when I was 13 and I started training speed. And then during COVID, I really fell in love with it because I could go to the gym and then get on the same route and set a new record every couple sessions or something. And I would really love doing that because there was no competitions at the time, and I don't live near any outdoor climbing. So that was the main thing I was psyched on, was just getting my record lower and lower in practice. And started competing when I was 15 in 2021. Went to Youth Nationals, went to Youth Worlds, and did my first adults competitions then. And yeah, qualified for the national team, and then been doing the World Cup circuit since 2022.
Do you remember your first PB?
Ooh, so my first PB was 11.63 seconds. Like that, I remember that was out on an actual timer. I did that. It was my first PB. I have not been back to that wall ever since. I thought about maybe going and trying to do half of it on my first run,
Beat
but
it, at least.
yeah, it was in the gym I trained at primarily in Texas opened in 2019, and so I had to go to another city in Oklahoma, and that was where I said like that was the first time I ever climbed like the full wall. And then yeah, so this is that was my first PB. So I've gone quite the fair bit since then.
Yeah. And I mean, for people who doesn't know, I mean, you're still very young. I mean, you're still 18, right? 2006,
Yeah,
right?
2006, February. So quite young.
Yeah. Quite young. Yeah, still a junior, which is crazy because I mean, you are the fastest man on earth ever, in vertical anyway, right?
Fastest climber. Yeah, I
That's
thought about
about right.
going. So Reza Alipour, when he held the world record, he said he was the fastest vertical man in the world. And I was like, okay, I'm setting my goal. I want that like Instagram bio. I want that thing. And then
Yeah.
after I actually did it, I was like, you know, I think I would rather be a bit more original because fastest vertical man like doesn't make that much sense. Like, what's a vertical man versus a horizontal man? So I was like, okay, I'll be the fastest climber in the world.
About that, actually, are you a good sprinter?
I am
No?
horrible at running.
Really?
Okay, well, I think I've actually done sprints a couple times as like a post becoming a speed climbing athlete, but I was horrible at track and field. I tried out and got cut from the team in I think like middle school, elementary school, and some people say like I run like a grandpa. I never have learned proper running form, so I always was just really bad at it. I get shin splints really easily because my form is so bad. I hate running like for cardio. I can't do it like at all. So like as far as like actual athletic and track and field, I am so bad. Like I couldn't do like any of the disciplines like with any high level of proficiency whatsoever.
That's interesting because you should, I mean, you must be pretty damn explosive though.
Yeah, I think like now if I've fully trained, like okay, I want to do a 100 meter dash, I probably could do it. Will I? Absolutely not. But like I think I could, like with my muscular breakdown. But I can always tell that story to like a younger athlete that's like, man, I don't have the talent to be good at climbing or anything. And I'm like, I will show you videos of me doing other sports when I was like 10 years old. And I swear you could be a world-class athlete in something that's not I you need to find your niche.
I mean, actually, I want to talk more about the actual speed climbing, the records, the route, the breakdown of it, and what you can improve. Let's start with your record run, 4.798. And you already said that wasn't perfect. How close was it to perfect though?
Ooh, I don't actually know how close it is to perfect, to be honest. So the previous run, I had two qualifier runs, and the first one was a record at 4:85, and I actually got off the ground slower on that one. So I had a reaction time of 2:23. So if you don't know what that means, it means you have to be in speed climbing above 0.1 in order for it to be considered a legitimate time and not a false start. And I was 0.12 slower than that. So in theory, if I had a perfect reaction time, I would have ran like a 4:75 that first run. And then the second run, it was 1:23 reaction time. So that would have been like a 4:77-ish. So in theory, that first run could have been slightly faster. And then I also had two runs in finals that could have been faster than the world record run. So not necessarily saying like like if you really, really break it down, I said I had that foot pop at the bottom, and then I also missed the foot on the first one. But again, you can make those tiny little errors and then still complete the run, and I train to do that. So yeah, I definitely have a lot of room to grow as far as the actual world record go. I wasn't really trying to like specifically go all out, and I think if I did, which will come at some point, possibly in front of the home crowd on the Salt Lake City wall, but I think if I did, I definitely could push it a little bit more towards the 4:06 barrier, and then the goal is under 4:06 by Paris, but that it's going to take some extra secrets I have up the sleeve for sure.
But when you say that you weren't really pushing it 100%, say, is that a conscious thing while you're climbing?
Yeah, so some people say, like, have the philosophy that when you push harder, you're getting out of your routine almost. So if you're trying really, really hard to do something that takes a lot of technical skill, like, I think it, like, when you try to do a workout and you're not a very, like, experienced lifter, your form can tend to deteriorate and get worse whenever you are, like, trying to lift too much weight. Like, that's why they say, like, coaches will have you lift less weight at the beginning, because, like, if you're doing a deadlift, your instinct is, oh, I should pull, I should change the muscle with my back, and then it makes it harder. So that somewhat happens in speed climbing, but it's an aspect of coordination. So if you're trying and you're moving really fast, your hands need to move faster, and that gets harder to hit the holds every bit, I guess, perfect as you want it to be. So it opens up the door to making some mistakes, and I wasn't trying to do that in any of my actual competition runs this season. So when you just kind of have a good smooth run, it can often be better than a fully trying your absolute max to get a perfect time.
So but you try on full, like in training. How did
Sometimes,
you? Yeah.
so there's also the aspect of periodization. So I have a full training cycle in which I like will plan out all of my trainings and workouts, and so that I will be in my best physical shape during the competition. So that's also an aspect of I can try in training. So my practice PB is 4:77, slightly faster than my comp PB. But doing that, and but again, that aspect of for the World Cup, I was also very primed. My nervous system and my muscles and my mentality was just I can be at my best right now. And same thing for the next competitions in Paris, I'll be like very primed. So that's also another aspect of it. So you can't just walk in the gym and say, I'm going to try all out for 100 runs. I guess you could, but it's definitely harder to do that. And there's also not much benefit because my goal is still, I want to win. I want to win races, and I want to be the best athlete I can be as far as actually competing goes. So I think the world records and faster times in practice will come along with that for sure.
Right, and it's no real use trying to do the perfect start, right? Because I mean, the risk of false start is always there, or is it? Can you train not to false start, say, and get really close? I mean.
So, if people want to notice me climbing, I swing at the start. So, it's actually like cheating almost, because in all other sports, you're not allowed to be moving when the pad is not, and when the clock is not going, because you're moving, you can't be doing that. But in speed climbing, you actually can. So the beep is the same every time. So after they're ready, it's a standardized amount of time. So I cue myself so that to go on ready, and I do a swing and a swing, so I have a bit of momentum before the actual timer starts. And it's really hard to master, and I still have by no means mastered it, to get a good or perfect reaction time every time, because you have to be like so like focused, and you're nervous because you're actually faced with the idea of disqualification if you go too far. But it does, it is in theory good, like controllable, maybe not down to the hundredths of the second, but definitely down to the tenths of the second to get off the ground.
Actually noticed you did that and wonder what the others didn't. But I wonder like if it's okay to move because you can't, but you can't, the thing is you can't move your foot, right? That's the only thing.
Correct. So the foot
Yeah.
also, and another issue is if your foot shifts, that's also considered a false start. So you have to like really put all your weight on that left foot, and then you can swing your body as long as that foot goes, any as long as that foot stays on the pad and the timer is registering that as your foot's on the pad, anything is okay. So that's the best kind of system that I've mastered in order to do it. No other athlete does it, I think, as well as I do, or as deliberately as I do. I think a lot of athletes have different cues they have to try and get off the pad, or try and get off the time, or get off the pad whenever the time goes. But no one does it as optimized as I do, I think, currently.
But now they have analyzed whatever you do, like at the World Cup, so now everyone's going to start swinging. But it's going to take they can come off swinging, you know.
Yeah, well, the aspect of it is, it's also like I originally when I did it, I called it the Icarus, because you really, if you don't do it perfectly, you will probably start, because if you're like distracted by anything, it's gonna be worse than it would be to just start at a standstill, because you're risking a false start, and then when you're like, oh, do I know this beta properly enough to actually do it in competition because I'm risking a false start? So it takes a lot of confidence in yourself, and it still scares me to do for sure.
How do you like actually the rule with the false start?
I strongly think they should replace the disqualification aspect for a time penalty aspect. I have zero clue why they have not done that already. I proposed it like multiple times. I think they seemed like for the World Games 2025, they seemed pretty open to it as far as saying instead of a disqualification, if you get under 0.1, you get a 0.2 or some number that's not a good incentive. So like if you get off the ground in say 0.05, right, you get a 0.2 added to your time. Like I think a lot of sports like F1 does it all the time, maybe not for false starts, but if you get a penalty, then your time goes up. So there's no reason you should be doing that, but you can still complete your run. And it doesn't mess up your opponent if you're running against them in qualification or practice, because they still don't allow the pe other person to rerun it in practice or have a good setup for themselves. So I think it should definitely be a penalty instead. I think that's the best solution to the problem. But again, it's going to require a bit of infrastructure because the timers don't have that built in yet. So I think that will be the future for sure, but it's still going to take time, and definitely not before the Paris Olympics.
And also, I think it's weird that I mean, in qualifications, if you set a legit run, like the first run, and then you false start in a second, you're out.
Yeah, I had that thought. I was like, do you think like it would be like a statement if I set a world record, and then like do you think it'd be good to change the rule? Like, do you think it would draw more attention to it? But unfortunately for me, that was not the case. But yeah, I would be an advocate, because you fly across the world to do it, and then you get off the ground 2/1000ths of a second too fast. It's not worth it. No one benefits from that.
No.
I can say that now.
You said that it's regarding the start there to not be distracted. Do you think would it be more difficult in Salt Lake, say, you know, home turf, lots of fans around you to really be able to not false start, like don't be too not to be too eager, say?
I mean, there's obviously going to always be the nerves aspect of doing anything performance based, especially that low margin of error. But I've actually found it basically all the speed events I got up, like the crowd gets so quiet before the beeps go. If you've ever been to a speed event, you know what I'm talking about. It's such a cool thing that like even massive venues like Chamonix, like with like 10,000 people in there, it gets silent. It's incredible. So yeah, not an issue currently. Maybe if we were full on climbing in like stadiums, then that could be an issue, but it's not currently enough of an issue to try to get a solution out of it.
So that was the start. I'm sure you can break down the route into like, you know, fractions of centimeters. But like what parts of the route, where can you improve?
So me personally, so me and my coach Alberto, we did a full on, like we made an analyst of a bunch of runs I've done and a bunch of runs everyone else has done. And we did, what do I do faster than everyone else, and what don't I do faster than everyone else? So during the middle, I'm taller, so my shoulder dips a little bit. So trying to move this left hand really fast and train that. Then there's also a point at the top in which I could be stepping slightly higher and consistently higher at a point of the hold, and then just optimization for a couple things, and then just getting stronger, because I definitely have some room to grow. Again, I'm quite young. I'm definitely not at my physical prime yet, so there's definitely a lot of room to grow, and I think that there's ways to reach that.
But this, you can't see, you know, with times coming down and speed going up, is there Any possibilities for new beta?
So I think more people will change to the line that I'm currently doing. I think that's what's first going to happen. And then maybe everyone in like of the past has said there's no new beta and that there's always been some new beta. But I really can't think of anything, and I've looked a lot. So we'll see. Hopefully that there can be something, or maybe someone will be like, there'll be like a 6'7" athlete that can do something. But I can't currently think of something that's palatable to every speedcomer that could make that could be better for sure.
But so what's different between your line and the others then?
So the most different thing is I skip hold number 12 at the top. So instead of doing this motion where you match and then bump using your left hand to go there, I just don't do the bump and I go right up with my left hand, and that allows me to get a little bit more pressure a little bit faster, and it also keeps my body more open and my hips more open so I can get my leg out a little bit faster. And I think you might have to be a bit tall to do that move. I don't know if my build is that optimal for it. I'm sure there's someone that can do it better than I can. But I think that it definitely does save time. You watch the two, if you watch the comparison of my run versus the older record from Leonardo, that's how you do it. And then also something that I do is my posterior chain at the top is much more optimal. So I do this move, and then go to the top. And most people hunch their back, and I don't do that because I've opened up my body more by skipping that hold. It's quite hard to explain without having a full diagram, but we've definitely looked a lot into the like kinesiology of how we make these movements.
But it sounds like a sequence where you will really benefit from becoming even stronger.
Being stronger is the biggest part of the equation for sure.
Oh, getting stronger, you say. Does that how much time do you spend in the gym, like lifting weights and that kind of thing, compared to actual time on the wall?
So yeah, definitely train in the gym a lot more than most climbers. Probably 3 or 4 sessions a week is about what I'm doing. So I do typically 4 climbing sessions and 4 lifting sessions a week. And that's how I break it down. Some days it'll be on a rest day, some days it'll be on a or day without climbing, but some days it'll be the evening of when I climb in the morning, and then some days it'll be just in the morning of the day where I'm not climbing. But the gym is definitely a very important aspect. Between the Pan American Games, where I got my qualification for the Olympics, and the start of the season for World Cups, I focused primarily on getting stronger in the gym, and I think it worked quite well. Like not focusing on, you're obviously going to be sore every single day, and your coordination suffers from that. So you start to make more mistakes when you're on the wall, but it definitely pays off when you're no longer sore and your autonomic nervous system is more primed for the competition and you're stronger now. So it's definitely pretty hard training to do so, but yeah, I think it helps. And then also some finger training and fingerboarding does help. Some campusing to increase contact strength and resiliency in the fingers is something that not just speed climbers can benefit from, but I love doing it. I always preach to people that are like, because I'll do bouldering sessions with my friends all the time, and I'll be able to do things like elite level boulders can't do as far as like certain types of movements where it involves contact strength or like moves like paddles. Like I'm disproportionately good at in terms of how good of a boulder I am. But since I've been doing all this training, I can do it super well because I can immediately activate my strength when grabbing holds.
What kind of exercises do you do in the gym, like the life weightlifting and stuff? What's
So a lot of
special?
stuff that's pretty specialized, a lot of plyometrics. So stuff that involves decreasing the ground contact time when you're like doing some stuff like jumps, a lot of explosive and power stuff. So say if you had like a bench press, adding a band onto that and trying to push it as fast as possible, looking for speed instead of amount of weight you're pushing or endurance, like number of reps you're doing. Like so speed is the biggest factor for being in the gym for speed climbing, obviously. And then stuff like deadlifts and Nordic curls and stuff just to build muscle for that breakdown will occur. Then there's also just some standard stuff like squats, regular bench press, and there is also stuff that's like track and field almost, mainly jumping, hurdle hops, and responses as far as like unilateral bounds, which is just jumps and then immediately jumping off the ground to increase your, because that's what you're doing is becoming, is you're trying to get off of the holds as fast as possible. So those are specifically a lot of the stuff I do. I've had a great coach, Matthew Madison. We hired him for years like climbing about a year ago, and he makes my plans, and he's amazing at his job. So super happy with the strides I've made this offseason as far as weightlifting goes.
Your coach is a speed climbing coach, or does he coach some other athletes as well, like some other sports?
So technically his job title is the USA Climbing Speed Team Manager and Strength and Conditioning Coach. He has a background in strength and conditioning, so he is like by degree, and then works with some of the other athletes with USA Climbing. Like I think he works with Brooke Rabatou and Jesse Gruber and Colin as well. I don't know if those are exact ones. Don't quote me. But so he works with the Boulder Elite athletes as well, but he's primarily like he films our runs and manages the speed flights and stuff like that as well.
Okay, so everyone's wondering now, how much do you bench?
I don't know exactly how much I bench. I want to say like 180 is my one rep max. I haven't tested it because it's kind of dangerous to test, but maybe I'll post a video of it if I do a full one rep max testing. I think I need to at some point make it a goal of getting 225. I think everyone wants that goal at some point. So that'll be my
You're talking pounds. You're talking pounds.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, like, oh, that's pounds, pretty bad. Pounds. Pretty good.
yeah, no, not kilos. Trying to do the conversion, but divided by 2.2. It's probably, about 90 kilos. yeah. In the US, we have also the 1,000 pounds club for you between your squat, deadlift, and bench. And so I'm at like 700 right now. So I probably can push that up a little bit too.
Is that a goal?
Yeah. I mean, as much of it, like not a serious one where I'm going to take away from my planning to do so, but I think as I get stronger and I become a more developed athlete, it'll naturally come.
It will come naturally. Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
What about the injuries? Like, did you have some injury, or what's the typical injury for the speed climber?
So I've been quite proactive through my career. I'm also quite young. So I haven't had, I've had very good history with injuries, you know, knock on wood as far as that goes. But I do stretching, light stretching after every session. I make sure to take collagen for my joints, I make sure to warm up properly, stretching or mobility at night as well, I'll do. And just making sure to manage my volume and get enough sleep and get, you know, proper nutrition and enough protein. And that's 90% of the job. And then I try to avoid, not that I'm perfect, but I try to avoid dangerous situations in climbing. Like if I do go bouldering, like making sure I'm falling correctly and not, you know, committing to moves that are going to be too bad or grabbing crimps that are super bad, not warmed up. So I do be quite proactive around stuff like that where other climbers get injured doing things, and so I just try to avoid doing those things as best as possible.
Sounds like a smart plan, I think. So it's easier said than done, I guess.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Yeah.
And again, just trying to be the most proactive I can, but injuries are a part of being an athlete for sure. So I think I ideally be able to manage myself, and then if I do get injured, just being the best I can at rehabbing it. And I've worked with a lot of really smart people as far as rehabilitation goes for things. I've had tendonitis in my fingers a couple times. I've had an injury in my foot, and adapting around those things and using different gear. Like for the foot injury, I just changed shoes because a different shoe helps it. Because I had an injury called turf toe, where you extend this toe, your big toe, like that too much, and then it can damage the muscles in your foot. So switching to a separate shoe and taping up the toe was just something that allowed me to keep climbing through that. So I was very excited that I didn't have to take time off for that. But things like that do happen. It's definitely not as much as I would say a bouldering athlete. I don't think it's as safe as lead as far as besides falling. But as safe as lead climbing as far as injuries go, but because you're just slamming your hands at super high speeds, and sometimes that can hurt the tendons. It hasn't been that researched as far as what injuries come up, but I've been pretty lucky and I've been pretty proactive. So hopefully that answers your question.
But about slamming fingers into the wall and stuff, like I suspect you can be pretty painful on the nails and fingertips. And
Yeah, the split tips for speed climbing is one of the worst parts for sure. And there's not a ton of solution to that. You just kind of got to deal with it. Put some super glue in there.
So you don't, train with a lot of tape or.
I personally don't, but some people do for sure. Some people have different philosophies towards it. My style of climbing is very accurate. So that means I focus on trying to minimize the space between where I aim my hand and where the hold is. So whenever, someone misses a hold, so say a hold's here and they go here and go down, so they're going up and down, they're losing time and they're also shock loading their joints and fingers. And so that can give them things like split tips and tendonitis when they do it too much. So my style of speed climbing also definitely helps my health as far as injuries go. But there's people who have very other, like very strong and powerful, where they have less accuracy in speed climbing, and they definitely could get more injuries and bang their knees into the wall, and things like that do really happen a lot.
But it seems a lot like you're leading the way in many ways, like doing your own thing more than copying others, right? Is there anyone that you're looking at, admiring, that you have as a sort of role model?
Absolutely, for sure. So there's many like before my time, I may be the fastest to ever do it, I guess at this point, but I am by no means the best speed climber. I think I did another interview in China and they said, "You're now the best speed climber." And I'm like, "Hold up, I am not the best speed climber at all. You can say I'm the fastest, but Alexander Miroslaw is definitely the best speed climber in the world." So looking up to her because she's won so many events, like the world record is cool, fastest times is cool, but speed climbing is about winning knockout races, and I want to do that and getting better than that. Like I've only won one World Cup, so then there's so many people who've done so many more, not just in speed. So looking up to other great competitive athletes like Yan Yagamrit, and it's becoming like Xu Jingzhong, the Chinese current head coach, has won so many, and Daniel Boulder have also won a lot. Like it's hard to him. So there's a lot of people, and also not just in speed climbing, that are in climbing at all that I want to look up to and be the best kind of athlete I can be and kind of make my own way as my own discipline to be the best in.
You have still time for it, because
Yeah, exactly. You're just
the
18.
bus, I have plenty of
is,
time.
I don't know, like 37 or something.
Yeah. So,
I'll say
and I'm all
39, I think.
39, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess I have 20 years until that's another interesting part about speed climbing is it doesn't really matter. This is what I've heard from one of my friends who's a track and field coach. He said that it doesn't really matter for speed climbing your top speed because you don't ever reach it because you're decelerating because of the movements. It matters your acceleration, and your acceleration drops off way less age-wise than your top speed does. So in track and field, athletes typically have to retire in their late 20s. There's some exceptions, but that's typically when they start getting worse for like sprinting and such. But their acceleration can still be very similar, but their top speed will drop off. But in speed climbing, you can be pretty old and still be having it be getting good at speed climbing at an elite level. So I definitely have or could have 20 years in me for sure.
That's interesting. And yeah, well, Bassa, he proves your point there, actually.
Yeah,
I
for
mean,
sure.
he's better than he's ever been, which is kind of cool.
Great to see.
But about that, you said before that I think you said you want to reach like 4.6 before Paris,
Yeah, I
in
say
the four
sub
six,
4.6, so 4.5.
4.5. Oh, okay. And you also mentioned that 4.5 is possible, you said 4.5. When do you think that's possible? Do you think it's possible now?
Yes, I think so, for sure. I think it's I don't accept like I'm gonna say it. Every single time someone's been like sub six is impossible, sub five five is impossible, sub five is impossible, then they've been wrong. So I'm saying, you know, I could run a three at some point. I'm not gonna put myself in that box because I really don't know. So I'm just gonna keep doing what I'm doing as far as input goes, as far as my training goes, and then wherever that takes me, I think that number will impress a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. And I mean, we I don't think we're getting very close to the limit quite yet, because I mean, we will probably come to a point where everyone is sort of equally fast. I mean, the best. And that's when we reach closer to the actual limit, I think. Like, it's been like that in the 100-meter dash in the track and field, right? Until
I
Usain
think
Bolt
that's
came.
close to the future. I think there might be a bit more separation as far as competitions go, instead of it just being a lottery of the thousandth of a second, because consistency is always going to be really hard. I think there's no way to train to be perfect in this high margin of a sport. Like, and also, like, I mean, there's not, because in a 100-meter dash, you're just running. It's less like high margin. It's not like you see people slip and fall in the 100-meter
Not so
dash.
much.
But like, even Steph Curry misses a free throw once every 10 times. So I think it's similar to that. I would say it's a bit harder. It's like making a free throw 16 times when you make hand movements. So I think it's like, there's definitely people who are going to be better and more consistency, and that'll make competitions interesting in the future when everyone is really, really fast.
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, probably the hurdles would be a better comparison than the dash. Even though that, I mean, speed climbing is still way more complex and complicated than hurdles.
I think there's speed climbing probably has one of the higher rates of like higher level mistakes as in the Olympics. Like, I can't think of many sports where like people that are like elite athletes will like fall as much as in speed climbing, but maybe I'm wrong.
But that's why I think it was so impressive in Wujiang, what both you and Wu Pen, is it?
Penguin, yeah.
Peng Wu, yeah, what he did, like, because you were super consistent all the way through. I mean, you made a slight mistake in the final, right? And still you did what,
5.1, yeah.
5.1, which is crazy with a mistake.
Yeah. That run, when I talked about when I said like you're trying to push yourself, that one I was definitely way trying to get. I was trying to get another world record, because I was like, I knew that this race, like, I'm gonna have to push really, really hard to win it. Like, there's if I make any mistake, I'm not gonna win this race, because it's a insanely good, probably the second best athlete in the world at this point, at least by time, in front of a home crowd when he's knocked down four sub fives in a final. So I was like, I have to go all out and try to get for another world record at this point. So I made a slight little mistake at the bottom and then still had really good pace through the rest of it.
Yeah, because it looked like you had really good pace, and then you sort of slowed down a bit. Then
Yeah,
you
yeah, yeah,
started,
yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. And so that like matters for acceleration. And I mean, if your opponent does slip, then you would win that race in that situation. I just didn't really catch that break as far as that goes.
How much is it mind game, the whole thing, you know, like to get too nervous, to make some mistake or something?
It definitely is about 50-50, I would say, physical and mental. It's definitely a much higher ratio of needing mental to sort of be on your own side, probably more than almost any other sport, I would say. Because like in lead or boulder, or maybe sort of like in lead, like if you are have good physical endurance, then you can do most things, right? You might get, you know, flash pumped or have to push past it, but you still generally it's a higher level of physical physical reliance on yourself. Like if you're doing a boulder and you're coordinated and you can and you're super strong, you can get some breaks there. This is no insult to any of the athletes. They're incredible, but it requires, I think, a little bit less mental game to do what you're doing. In speed climbing, you could be the strongest person in the world, you can be super fast, but if you don't have the mental, you'll just make a mistake, and then the time that comes out of that is a fall or a lower time or a higher time. So it doesn't matter at all if you don't have the mental game, and it requires a lot of mental training for sure.
Exactly. Do you have some special routine or something to keep that focus during a competition?
Yes. So if you look at my routine, I have sort of released a new one as for the season, but I kick the wall. And the reason I do that is because after I kick the wall, I have about 15 seconds in which the route is going to be the same every time, regardless of where I am and what wall I'm on. So as soon as I kick the wall, I walk out, chalk up, I wipe my feet on a towel because grease can get on your feet and stuff like that from the floor. I walk on my heels because there's no heel hooks in speed running, so I can get them dirty. Then I do my run, and that run is the same every time. I get to the point, I load myself for ready, and then it's the same beeps every time. I do my swing start and I do my run. So that's my routine, and it works pretty well, I think, as far as consistency goes. I don't do it absolutely every run in training. Sometimes I'll just go. But I have gotten it down really to a science of trying to do the same thing every time for competitions.
So up to the point where you kick the wall, you're like kind of pretty chill and nothing really matters. And then you get into the zone when you kick the wall, or
I think I wouldn't say I'm very like I'm that lackadaisical. I'm probably one of the more focused athletes, people would tell me when I'm in competition, because I'm trying to get warm and I'm trying to stay focused. And I'm trying to manage my physical self, like to be physically primed. It definitely I'm on an acute basis, so like being as warm as I can, because being not just like warm, like you've already gotten pumped, but warm like you are immediately ready to go. And immediately at 100%, because if you wait 5 minutes, you're going to be at like 90%. So that's like staying at the perfect level. Definitely takes a lot of effort to manage an ISO. So doing that is kind of taking up my entire actual focus through that time.
So you're not, it's not very relaxed sort of environment, I guess, with people joking around and
I think before the actual warm-up period starts, it's amazing. Like I get to talk to all my friends and we'll play games and stuff like that in ISO. But when, as soon as I actually start like getting my heart rate up and such, I personally would rather just stay focused.
Do you have some training buddy, like, or to train alone? No, because the climbers, they usually train together to push themselves and stuff like
Yeah,
this.
no, I love training with other people. I am a big proponent of you should train with other people, especially for speed, because you can do races and then you can have the stimulus of racing someone else really fast on the wall, and you can't replicate that without someone else. So I absolutely love training with both the people here in Salt Lake City with the US team, and I also spent 3 weeks in Italy, in Milan, training with Matteo Zeloni, the current world champion. Him and I are like really good friends. I stayed at his house, and we train together. It's a very similar environment to like training on a sprint wall with someone, where you're sitting down and you're talking for 7 minutes, and then you go and you're sitting down and talking for 7 minutes. So definitely a lot of my best friendships have come out of that environment, where you just kind of chill in and you can talk to and then just do your run. And then it's a great training environment for sure. And you definitely do get pushed and held accountable, even just subconsciously, even just like I can't, I have to do my warm up and do it because then someone else is relying on me to be at my good state. So definitely a very big proponent for sure.
So in Boulder and lead, skin care is super important. Does it matter as much in speed, like that you have perfect skin?
So this is what I would say is speed climbing wears down your skin at about the same level as like hard bouldering does. Maybe because you do less actual climbing when you go to the speed gym. So like if I go to the gym and I do 10 runs in a day, I'm grabbing way less holds than someone would be if they're training bouldering. But the holds are really like you're taking off more skin per hold touch, I guess, too, because you're doing it really fast. But I would say yes, but also the skin gets really bad. It doesn't take away from your performance that much. Like it hurts, but it doesn't like make it actually that much harder, which I guess is true for bouldering too. It's just actually way, it's just way like longer. So it's subconsciously like, if I do a 5 second run with bad skin, I'm like, oh, I hit the buzzer, oh, my skin hurts. But if you're actually trying to do a boulder, I think it's way worse. But skin is definitely, it does wear down as at the rate of a normal climber for sure. Still have to take a rest day for that reason. So it's really good. I've been working with Fullcrit Milk out of Singapore, and they have a really good hand care solution. to like mend. It's so good. It's like by far the best. It's actually like they infuse collagen in it too. So that helps a lot too, to keep my hands hydrated, especially in Salt Lake City because it's so dry here and I'm used to being so humid. So definitely a pretty big proponent of skincare, and washing your hands after every session is almost the biggest part of it too.
Have you noticed any difference in how people view speed climbing now that it's, I mean, I feel it's getting so much bigger and gets more attention. As you know, have you noticed this?
Yeah, so that's always kind of been the goal with me personally, is not only do I want to be the best athlete I can, I want to be the best ambassador for speed climbing that I can be. So I think speed climbing has definitely not only gained the interest of climbers in a way that it hasn't for before, and it's gained there it like a lot of attention outside of speed climbing, like within the Olympic community, and I think actually being its own sport in the Olympics will really help. But I've been super pleased recently, and I think it is still has a lot of room to grow and will grow a lot. But every interaction I've had in the climbing community and with other athletes has been very positive. I mean, some of my best friends are both the athletes and other climbers, and I think the respect, I think the respect starts with me as an athlete. They know that I'm really methodical about training, and then that garners the respect of them, and then that helps them respect other speed athletes because they know how hard it is. So that aspect is definitely key to it. Then I think also the combined format was what everyone hated, and not just speed climbing before it split off. Like I think speed climbing got a lot of negative attention from both elite athletes who didn't want to speed climb and were kind of forced to, which I don't like. I get right. I guess I would do the combined format if they still had it because I think it's really fun and I think I would be quite good at it because I'm a bit more well-rounded than a lot of other speed climbers. In my opinion, I might get some flack from everyone else saying, I pulled it part of it. But then, when you force people to do something they don't want to do, they're like, oh, I don't like this. So, but now that like I can just kind of talk to people, they're like, oh yeah, I trained speed climbing. It was hard, and also like messed up my other training routines, so I didn't love doing it. But now that like it's its own people, they like speed climbers, and we hang out. So, I'm definitely very pleased with the direction it's going.
Oh, how do you climb picture like in the lead or boulder?
I'm probably just barely a double digit climber, like maybe 10, 11 if I projected. I could probably like if I did a full off season, maybe push a little bit harder and get some like other projects, but I haven't really found that yet. I definitely prefer outdoor lead climbing. It's probably my favorite form of climbing, period. Like speed climbing is obviously really, really fun. I love the process of training it. But I love the process of doing outdoor lead climbing, even indoor, but I love that process so much. I think the hardest thing I've ever done is like 13A and 7C plus, but I love just like getting on a lead route and just doing it to climb for fun, because it's something I love to do. So I don't focus, like I don't train the other disciplines. I just do them whenever I want to. And it's such a great thing to just add into the week if I want to.
So then you probably got some room for improvement, like you said, if you don't properly train them and still climb on the level you do.
Yeah, I think when I'm older, I think I will have a retirement date for speed climbing, and then I think I will always be a climber past then, and then I'll be just a super good outdoor crusher. That'll be the goal. I think there's a couple of climbers in the world that have like the resume of they've done like maybe like 8A and then like sub you like sub 5 8A and in both. Like maybe that'll be a goal. Well, I'll set it and I'll like train. I could definitely get sights on that at some point.
And there are other records in climbing world. Like, how impressed are you by the 158 on the L cap?
Okay, again, outdoor speed climbing is awesome. If it wasn't insanely dangerous, I would so do it. Like, it seems so fun. It's not at all similar to what I do, but I would love to like climb a mountain really fast and break that down in the same way. Like I watched some of the stuff with the L caps. It's like, it's like, okay, if we take this route and we take slightly less gear and we do this one pitch, like I would love to do that. Like that sounds like so fun to break down in the same way and to actually be outside doing that. I would so do that if it wasn't like borderline gonna kill me. If you're climbing with no gear almost. So, I definitely really, really admire all the outdoor space climbers, and even the alpinists that do it, is if you're going to take it a step further. I would want to do that at some point in my life for sure.
But you could put like a static top rope on a L cap and just go for it,
I could. I think you would lose some speed though if you're not like fully multi-pitching it though. If like it just wouldn't be like you have to take a little bit of the safety precautions out to in order to do it faster. But I think like if I trained for to be a good multi-pitch climber, which would take a long time, right? I would have to actually do it. But I still can move my limbs faster than probably any other climber in the world. So that could help me for sure. I've also looked at like some of like I want to do like the deep water solo events and the even the maybe the speed multi-pitch, like the dual ascent up the dam would be really cool to do because that is like a race. And I would have to train a bit of lead climbing for sure and train endurance and train to climb for several hours on end is a different training profile than what I do currently. But I definitely would be super interested in doing that in the future. And it's really fun and not just the same route. I think it would breathe some life into training. Instead of just doing only competitive speed climbing.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be hours for you. It'd be like 10 minutes.
Ideally, no, because then you'd have to like, I'd have to belay and keep that energy up and then all that. And then they do fall penalties. Like I do this for the Red Bull one. They do fall penalties. So I would
Yeah.
have to train to like do well, like, because it'd be way more, I would definitely be the worst lead climber if I were to go to that event. Like I would definitely be by far worse lead climber than everyone else there. Even if I did like a full couple months of straight wall training, but I would have to like be climbing at a higher limit than other people. But we'd see. I also would get definitely gain advantages or disadvantages based on route setting because if they're having me do like a crimpy, like harder route for a pitch versus if they're having me do like seven dinos, then it's definitely way easier or harder for me to do.
This, I read somewhere that you speak Indonesian.
Yeah, Bahasa Indonesia.
Exactly.
Oh, I asked that. This is how you ask if you speak. But I like studying languages. I've been studying about five languages, Indonesian, Spanish, German, and French, and English and Indian language. I've been doing that a lot for fun. It helps with communication, specifically there in Indonesia. I found I had a lot of experiences in which I could speak to people that I couldn't speak to otherwise. So definitely a big proponent. I'm not that good. I know the language journey. Learning terms, I'm maybe an A2 speaker in Indonesian. So I can do a lot of things around town. I can order food, say things, give and get directions, stuff like that. But I definitely couldn't hold that well of a conversation in Indonesian. But I'll definitely keep learning. I'll definitely keep traveling, especially with the European ones. Like I'll get better as I go and visit every time I do.
I'm sure it's pretty appreciated by the Indonesian guys, though, right? The speed
Yeah,
climbers, right?
they love it. They love it.
Yeah.
It's a good level of connection with everyone for sure.
What's the most difficult language to learn? The Indonesian or German or
Probably German. Yeah.
okay.
But then you should try a Swiss German.
No,
That's
it's fine. So, yeah, dude, the Swiss German, like I went to Bern or like and I got crushed. Like say the German speakers are a little rough because I'll talk to them and I'll be like, oh, wie geht's dir? And then they'll be like, oh yeah, how are you? It's a very big thing in the German with the Germans to just immediately speak back to you in English and then I was like, yeah, I want to practice. Like ich möchte üben, bitte, bitte, bitte. But they've been pretty nice. And then traveling around, it's been cool. I found in France, they definitely have a lower level of English proficiency. Not to knock on France, but I went to Voiron, and like, it definitely helps to speak a little bit of French because not everyone spoke English. So that helped a little bit, and I've been working a lot on that. I actually am going to do an interview for Block Corp, and then I told them I could do for this one, which is going to be tomorrow. I'll do an intro in French, and I'm going to try to do a full one in French at the Chalmers World Cup in 2 months after I learn it more.
You mentioned before that you start starting at university this fall, right? Did you say that?
I'm going to start in fall 2024.
Yeah, this coming fall. Yeah. So what are you going to study?
So I am doing a kind of a special program. I'm doing pre-business for bachelor's. but I get to specialize, and I'm specializing in supply chain management and international business. So as a career, I definitely want to work internationally, more specifically with the idea of importation and exportation of goods, post-climbing maybe. But I definitely have been interested in like world politics and logistics. So finding a career in that realm would be good. And then if I could also work in climbing at the same time for a maybe hold company exporter or something like that, that'd be amazing.
There is one question from Instagram. If you could design the next speed route, what kind of route would it be?
Ooh, that's a good question. Wow. Okay, so I definitely would design it to use the same infrastructure that we have now, so same wall degree and same holds. I would make it smaller. So I think they should actually change this now if I were to make them make a change. But so there's a hold way out to the left that no one uses. I would remove that and make it smaller so you can build smaller walls because those would be cheaper. And gyms could be more incentivized to put them up. Then I would make it a bit more. I don't know if I would rather have it be more straight or more complicated, but I probably would err on the side of more complicated and make the world record like in the fives-ish. Or the like the theoretical possibility closer to like 4.9 around that area so that you could have more intricate betas. And also I would give it some sort of parity so that shorter climbers and taller climbers can also do it at the same level. Like if it's it would be probably one of the more complicated route setting jobs. And I think when it comes out everyone will hate it. But if there's a new route, I think there should be a lot of thought put into doing like the best route possible. I think that exists.
Do you think it will
Would
change?
you like to, yeah, exactly. And would you like to train on the new route?
So I think I would definitely prefer instead of them getting a new route, I would give speed another discipline that's closer to speed, what it used to be, where you have an on-site competition. I think that would be quite cool. Where you can see athletes maybe through a qualifier, semifinal, and final break down the routes and get faster. And you can watch them like with a route preview or put them in isolation and like they can look at it together and say, I'm gonna do this beta, I'm gonna do this beta. Ooh, that might be too risky. I don't want to do that. Like I think that would be cool to watch, maybe like as an expo event. And then I think that would be better than just a straight up change route. Keep the same route, do speed standard and speed classic. And then have you could even do 14 events a year instead of seven. Like they do seven boulder, seven lead. They could do seven speed classic and seven speed standard, if that's something that's possible. Then you could potentially propose that to the Olympics as a different discipline as well. They also, for the World Games, and then they're going to propose it for the Olympics, maybe 2032, where they're doing a four lane speed route in some way. So a race, and then the winner of four moves on. And then they're also doing a speed relay. So three people from the same country do it as a relay. So there's definitely a lot of changes to speed climbing that can be made, but I would definitely keep the current format around for now at least.
So the next competition for you, it's Salt Lake now, right?
Yeah, I'm actually going to compete in the North American Cup on the 28th, which is Friday.
Okay.
Now it's today. Doing that, getting some practice with, there's actually an open invite so anyone from any country can compete. And then the idea of competing in nice weather in Salt Lake City at the training center sounds really nice. So, gonna go that one. And then the Salt Lake City World Cup is a couple days after that. And then 2 month break until Chamonix.
But I think that's it. I think this is you've said so. This is so much content, actually. Now I think it's super interesting also because I must be honest. Like 10 years ago, I always was like, oh, you know, speed climbing. What is this? You know. But over the years, it's getting more and more interested, and I watch it like keen. Like I'm a keen watcher always.
Yeah. It's a fun thing to watch. I think that's also been another part of the appeal is speed climbing has been like it's really fun to sit down for 40 minutes and watch a speed final because you're constantly entertained. Like there's no like it's not like a slow sport at all. Like you are watching a race and watching another race, and that's your evening, I guess, if you want it to be.
Yeah, and also like the faster it is, the more entertaining it is, I think. So
Yeah.
cool to watch. And so thank you so much for keeping us entertained and for tonight, and good luck at in Salt Lake.
All right. Yeah, and then
And
I'll maybe see you guys in Chamonix too.
yeah, probably.
Yeah, probably. Probably. I wouldn't say for sure, but probably. I hope to go there. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I will catch up with you then.
Yes.
And thank you so much.
Thank you
Okay.
so much.
Thank you very much,
Take
Sam.
care, and till next time.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Ciao.